Blog Talk Radio.
When life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes. So write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it's a great Wednesday evening. Great to be with you tonight. Of course, thank you as always to our intro music from the band Far Cry with a great guitar player, band leader, Pete Fry. He's awesome. You got to check them out, the band, the man, everything. They are awesome. He also has a great, great restaurant in Philadelphia, Tap Room on 19th, which Holly and I still have to go to sometime. But tonight is going to be a great show. We got a guest coming that both Holly and I just absolutely think the world of. And right at the moment, Holly is not quite on just yet, but she will be. I do have Vicky with me, so Vicky might have to chime in as far as cat updates are concerned to give you all the latest from her angle. But definitely hello to everybody in the chat room. People are starting to log in. It looks like I see Holly is logged in there. And then we also see Carol Preflatish, awesome author and screenwriter and a finalist with the screenplays in this year's Imaginarium. So, yeah, that's coming up very soon, just a little under a month away at this point. Any time to slow down? Slow down, please. Yes, it's definitely getting near that time. And I tell you what, it's been an avalanche of work this week. Yeah, we've definitely been working around the clock, so bear with me if I sound a little bit tired tonight. Definitely not because of you all. Love doing the show, of course, and visiting with you and talking creativity and writing and all the good topics that we do and giving you updates in the convention. But yeah, we've been burning the candle at both ends. And there's a good reason for that. And I'll go, I can even go by the numbers if you would. But one thing I would like to ask is a favor at favechef.com. Yes, F as in Frank, F-A-V, chef.com. That is a site for foodies, culinary stuff, chefs. And Holly is actually, I think, 13th at the moment in their vote for favorite chef. And if she makes the top 20 cut, she moves on to the next round. And let me tell you, she definitely deserves a shot because she is of that caliber. And those of you that have had her dinners can vouch for that. So, yeah, if you have had one of Holly's dishes and are listening, and a lot of our listeners actually have, go over there and give her a vote. Definitely would appreciate it very much because Holly, yeah, it's definitely a big passion of hers. Give her a vote for sure. But yes, by the numbers. Yeah, we've been doing a lot on the press side, and you probably noticed a lot of new releases coming out. And yes, that combined with Imaginarium equals overkill. But some great stuff, a great product, high-quality stuff is coming out. Of course, we had Lawrence Wheel last week for Pan in the Message Chair, the great Stephen Shrewsbury with his brand-new Garias LaGault novel, Reckoning Day. And then coming out tomorrow, folks, in print and ebook, not one but two brand-new releases, we have Michael Houchins' third thriller in his franchise that began with Tybee Allen, The Death of Innocence. It is called The Phantom of the Circus, an absolutely great cover, which we just unveiled, and that will be coming out on ebook and print tomorrow. And along with that, yes, the Marathonarium Anthology is finally available, folks, edited by the amazing Sandy Lender, who conducted the workshop that this came out of at last year's Imaginarium. Well, the wait is over, and it's a gorgeous-looking book. Definitely, I think everybody's going to appreciate the presentation. There's nine fantastic authors in it. including some of our regular listeners, actually. We have some of our listeners, like Clayton Barnett, is in it. And great collection of stories, really high-quality writing. And I think that people are going to be really happy with the way it looks and it came out. And definitely it's not a giant book, so it won't be that expensive. But, yeah, proceeds from it will support the convention. And as we are a grassroots-developed event, that helps a lot. So, yes, I appreciate it. If you buy an ebook or the book itself, definitely would help. We want to give a spotlight to all the authors. They can all use their stories for whatever they want as well. So, yeah, it was a deal. We made a special deal with them so they could use their stories on anything they want. Didn't tie any of those stories up, but we do hope you give them a look in our collection. And that's coming out for the Imaginarium Convention, which we will be celebrating at the event. And then this week, it is just looks like Holly is, I think, coming aboard. I think that's Holly.
Holly
right
is
there. Awesome, awesome. Well, good. You're just in time because this is just Sandy Lender week, I'm telling you. Yeah, I just talked about the one that she edited. But let me tell you, not one. Not two, but three books coming out at once. Yes, the relaunch of her Choices Fantasy Trilogy, and it is awesome. The cover art came out beautifully. Olivia, who designed the cover, just did an amazing job with the three covers. They brand together so well, and we showed them off. We're showing them off today. Book will be available on Friday because we're going to make sure that this is ready for Imaginarium. And it is just gorgeous. And these are just great fantasy. You like fantasy, this is in your wheelhouse. And let me tell you, yeah, Sandy is a fantastic fantasy writer. That's my foundation. So I think I speak with a little perspective on that. That's my roots. So let me tell you, Sandy is the real deal. And appreciate it if you do pick up these new reissues. Definitely, I think they're going to be the best edition yet, in my opinion. Just take a look. You'll see what I mean. Go to the 7thstarblog.com or 7thstarpress.com. It's the latest post on those, and you can get a look at all three covers. And, yes, by the numbers, this week, what has Stephen been doing? Well, in addition to, of course, I have barely been able to get in the morning writing sessions. Today I did not because I was really crunched today. But I have been keeping up with my morning writing, so that's good. That's something I absolutely swore I would never shirk. But so I've kept up with that. And, of course, all the convention tasks, of which there are a ton right now. But in addition, just in the last several days alone, getting ready, over 2,000 pages of print material in five print layouts, five ebook layouts, five formatted covers, and it's a lot to go through. It's a lot to go through. I can actually say that by the numbers, and that's not counting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages just previously, probably about 1,000 pages of material between the couple of releases that came in the previous week. So, ebooks and print layouts and everything else. So yeah, if you combine the whole run, it's been a monster. And Steve is definitely in need of a good tumbler of bourbon at the moment. So, but yeah, we're hanging in there, getting it done and making sure that everything is rocking and rolling for the big convention. And so, yeah, that's what I have been doing and immersed in. Definitely shout out. Yes, I see Sandy Lender is in the chat room. Metalbeck Harrison has entered. And Dewan Hearn, yes, another of the finalists in the screenplays for Imaginarium. Yes, definitely awesome. So we have two screenplay finalists, and we have the person that literally has four releases out this week. One is an editor and three is an author. Has four releases in one week. That is awesome. So, yeah, very productive group in this chat room right now. So tell you what. But I'm going to turn it over to Holly because I know she had some updates, and we'll let her do that for a couple minutes, and then we'll give you a little bit about who brought you tonight's show. So take it over, Holly. You had some notes to give.
Oh, do I now? Well,
you said something about
new
panels or new something. You said
I do. I squeezed in because I had, you know, some room, and I did squeeze in a writing mental health and disability panel. It's going to be moderated by the wonderful Megan Simpson. So that'll be a neat little addition. I've also added inclusive cosplay, which is about, you know, how cosplay has become more inclusive than ever with the new trends, the gender bending cosplay, and all that. So the wonderful Ghostbuster, John Peacock, will be moderating that one. So that will be interesting, very fun. And let's see. Oh, we will have something big to announce involving Michael Nost, but I can't announce that just yet because it's in the works. But we do have something coming up. I want to tell you to watch out for updates, watch out for posts, because we will have something there going on. I do want to also mention there is some workshops that have not been added to the website yet. One is Diversity and Speculative Fiction, and that's going to be presented by John F. Allen. And then we're going to have a wonderful presentation by Heather Lee Ryan, and she's going to be discussing Book Pressed, which her description reads, authors, writers, readers from all backgrounds will benefit from Book Pressed. Creators Talk, Finding Your Tribe. This class will focus on the advantages and disadvantages of web-based writing groups. We will also include fun writing exercises with take-home goodies. Key topics include time management, criticism, and finding your own tribe to help you start your writer's group. And that will be on Friday at 4:45. So that's going to be a fun one. You, the Writer, is also going to be presented by Michael J. Allen. And then we've got P.L. Ribbon, who had to cancel, but now she's back. Things worked out. She gets to come after all. And she's going to be doing her character as setting, crafting engaging and dynamic environments on Friday at 1 o'clock. And then we've got a neat workshop headed by Sanji David. And I always make her name. What is it? Sanji. I always butcher Sanji. Her name, and she don't say
okay.
that to me. But when
she, no, she when always
she
gets a kick out of it.
Why,
she does
like,
laugh. Yeah.
Yeah, she gets yeah. excited. But
she always gets
be
excited because I pronounce it correctly.
She does. Yeah. She does.
And that's actually
it's
literally
be called
true.
Fantasy. It is fantasy versus mythology. Now, in this workshop, she's going to be discussing her research on the differences and similarities between fantasy and mythology. She's going to be looking at three key authors for analysis, Lee Gunn, Tolkien, and Beagle.
Nice.
So that, and that's going to happen Sunday at 9 a.m. That's going
to
be really cool.
I may have to go to that one.
Yeah.
Sounds up my alley.
Yeah, that's
nice.
That's going to be neat. That's going to be really neat. She's done a lot of research, you know, she's been in college for, well, I don't know what all her PhDs are in, but yeah, she's very literary. I do know that. She was also a student of Michael Williams.
Williams, yeah.
Yeah, a while back. Mm-hmm. But that's the
nice.
New things that have been added. I do want to announce, and we will get the updates on the website. Like I said, next week, we're really going to be working on that, you know, schedules. I've got everybody that actually turned in a panel survey.
Yeah.
All your emails are sent out. So if you don't see them, look in your spam. I've been getting emails about it, and I'm like, look in your spam folder, and sure enough, you know, that's where some of them go. So if you don't see an email from me, check your spam. Now, if you didn't fill out one, you know, I can't help it. I'm not going to track everybody down to fill out one. I'm going to, you know, have to assign now. So now comes the time where mm-hmm. I'm going to put you where I know your skills are and, you know, your sets, you know, where you could really add a lot of input. So that's where we've come to now. We will have some new guests to announce next week.
Yep.
Stephen will get those out.
Yep.
I do want to point out, let's see here. We are doing author readings on Sunday, so I do want people to pay attention to that. It will be on the website. I have everybody announced they're going to be 10-minute blocks that people get to read from whatever, you know, they want to of their work. So that's going to be really interesting. I do want to mention, so everybody start getting ready for this, but the ball that we hold on Saturday after the banquet and the cosplay contest and all that, we're going to have a 1920s. It's Roaring 20s because we're in 2020s, but it's the Roaring 20s ball. So if you would like to get dressed up and come dapper, you know, that's great. I am going to try to get something together. I've been planning this. And, yeah, I'm getting down to the nitty-gritty now, so I really have to, you know, get with it here. But I do plan to dress up. That's going to be fun. And then we do have some late night panels. That's going to be fun too. I do want to mention also on Friday night, I will actually be one. Jane Sabata asked me to join this panel, and it's at 8 p.m. So as long as there's not fires for me to put out, I will be on it. But it's called Horrors Against Humanity. Now, it's going to be 18 plus because if you've ever heard of the card game, Cards Against Humanity, it gets kind of, you know, gritty,
yeah.
Right? I guess you could put it. Yeah, so, you know, you take the everything in stride. Everybody gets made fun of. It doesn't matter, you know, what your race or your gender or, you know, what it's just fun. It's just a fun game. But this is all going to do with horror topics. So this is going to get very interesting. And right now, as long as things don't change, Donald Gilroy and James Sabata are the moderators for this. And then I'm going to be on there with John Palacino, Tommy B. Smith, Jennifer Mulvihill, and Jason William Allen. So that's going to be interesting.
Sounds awesome. Well,
yeah.
Hey, we're going over just a little bit. Yeah, our guest is on deck, Holly. I'm gonna have to jump in here.
Go ahead.
And but I have to get in real quick before we bring our guest on. I want to acknowledge the folks that brought you tonight's show. And tonight's show is brought to you by the amazing Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and also those fine folks at Burr Bostet. And all of them are going to be there next month at Imaginarium. So. Here's a little bit from Sandy, and then we'll go over and give you a little bit about Per Bostet, and then we'll go right to tonight's guest, who is just awesome, and I can't wait to begin the conversation. So here you go. Here's Sandy Lender.
Prophecy stirring in the land of Unveiled. Dragons are rising, and an unclean army marches toward one young woman who holds the fate of the world in her hands. Amanda Charisse may be considered a chosen one, but she exercises free will in Sandy Lender's epic fantasy series, coming soon from 7th Star Press. Subscribe to Sandy's newsletter for updates and news breaks at sandylender.com.
Thank you, Sandy, and congratulations on the barrage of new releases. 4 in 1 week.
Yes.
Fantastic. And so now we go over to the fine folks at Per Bostet. Shout out real quick to Marion Allen, Teely Harris, and Sarah Marion. Per Bostet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostet offers a little bit of everything. Follow the investigations of Private Eye, David Blaze, and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at perbostetpublications.com at Amazon, or you can find the press in person and in conjunction in Indianapolis, Louisville's Imaginarium Convention in July, and Prime Crime in Indianapolis in October. Per Bostet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Per Bostad. That is awesome. So I'm going to go right over to the introduction. And tonight I have the great honor and pleasure of introducing a USA Today best-selling author and award-winning poet. As if that's not enough, she is also a highly acclaimed artist and graphic designer. And she writes all kinds of different fantasy, subgenres of fantasy, romantic fantasy, epic fantasy, urban fantasy, all things fantasy. And she has a lot of books out, and she is amazing, and she is going to be a panelist at this year's Imaginarium Convention. So, yes, folks, it is my pleasure and honor to bring on to the Star Chamber Show for the first time, the one, the only, Shannon McRoberts. And Shannon, your mic is on. Yes.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
All right.
Sorry. We went a couple minutes over our usual time because, oh, my God, we had the mountain avalanche of updates. this is a perfect storm week because we had, like I just said, we have 5 new titles coming out from the press, and then we had like about 50 new things coming out, and Holly's in for Imaginarium, and yeah, it's one of those weeks. But
yeah,
we are excited to see you here, and got to see you in person, of course, at the Great Conference of Writers, the second annual edition of that, up in Frankfort, Kentucky. Shout out to Jenny Smith. Definitely, the bluegrass writers are just awesome. What a group! And got to see you there and hang out and talk, and we were table buddies anchoring the corner of the dealer room there. And so we thought, well, we haven't had you on the Star Chamber show in I think this is your first time actually, which is odd because we've known you a long time. So it's great.
It's because I'm very introverted.
not with us though. We have fun.
Yeah, technically not with us. Yeah. But I think a great proportion of our people tend to be introverted, but yes, you're going to find that you're going to become more extroverted when you come in July. It's weird how it happens. All the introverts become extroverts for like 3 magical days. It's like Brigadoon, that old movie. You know, it's like it manifests every year, magical place, and that's what happens. But catch us up. How? What is going on in the world of Shannon McRoberts lately? You've got so much cool stuff. So let's see where you're at right now and begin the conversation there. As far as what's the latest?
Well, the newest project is I started putting up things on Kindle Vella, and then I also found out about a place called Ream. That's like a serialized, kind of like Patreon, but it's made for authors to do serialized fiction. And it's like a subscription-based service. So you can only do Kindle Vella if you're in the Americas. And a lot of my people that like read my stuff, they're in the UK or they're in like weird places and they can't read that fiction. So Ream is an international like thing, like, you know, it's on the web, so they can. They don't have to mess with tokens or Amazon or any of that stuff, and you just read it on your computer or your phone. And basically, it kind of think of it like Webtoons, think of it as. And then July 1st, I have a book coming out. That's my Murder in Lost 36 book. It's kind of like an occult fantasy ghost mashup. I don't even know. The one person that read it, she kind of described it in that show. She said, what if Jessica Fletcher was a ghost whisperer? And I was like, well, okay, yeah, I guess that's the vibe. And I don't know. I like to describe myself as someone with a barrel full of irons that are on fire, and the little shiny squirrels are throwing dry leaves into the fire because, you know, this week my new project besides books is I decided I want to make handmade cards because, you know, why not?
Nice.
Right.
Nice.
Why not?
Yeah, I will say you're an exceptional designer and artist. I mean, yeah, love your covers and cover work and everything. And I know you do freelance. So, folks, if you're listening, yes, she does freelance work as well. But, yeah, that's not surprising that you got some art in your irons in that fire.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
because we noticed that when we sat next to you at your table, because you had all these little cool stuff everywhere, and I know Holly was just fascinated and talked to later on about all the stuff you had. Yeah, well, Holly, you can talk about that in a little more detail.
I got my glow in the dark bookmark from Miss Shannon. It's a dragon and it glows in the dark.
Yeah.
Sandy Linder.
Yeah,
you better bring some, because mm-hmm. Sandy Linder is going to watch some. I'm just saying.
Oh, she will.
So what you're saying is I should pack my trunk with a traveling circus of themes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you were.
Yes.
Yeah, and you have the coolest like modular set. It was just so cool. You just have it together. I mean, you had that nice modular case system, and it was just.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing. That was cool.
I look like it.
I was going to say, seeing you track down your table and put up your table is so cool, because she is the most organized author I've received as far as keeping her stuff all together and putting it up and taking it down. I'm a damn mess.
She's in the top tier, no doubt. I've watched a bazillion authors set down, and I've seen all.
And we were sitting by her. And Lord have mercy, and here I am with the wagon and stuff everywhere.
We're doing good just to have that wagon, Holly. That's improvement.
Thank you. So. Thank you to David Sheridan for that birthday gift for Stephen a couple of years back.
Oh, it's so a godsend.
Oh, that helps us so much.
On my back. Yeah. Definitely, yeah, because books weigh a little bit when you get a bunch of them in crates or totes or whatever. And you have no shortage of titles. You have a beautiful website, by the way. Well,
nope.
I mean, obviously, you
Thank
have a
you.
Designer's eye. And but if you go under books on your website, I mean, presented really, really nice, and you can get a real quick idea of the kind of stuff you do. And definitely in my wheelhouse too there, because I a lot of flavors of fantasy, and the covers are just awesome. Like I said, again, that's going to be a theme tonight is your cover work is fantastic. And, you have a variety you have several series in motion, and how do you plan on which one to add the new title to? Do you go with what's kind of hot at the moment, or you just kind of make sure that you're adding to each one as you go, or what's your approach? Because you got several franchises in motion here.
Yeah. I try to finish them, because, you have those people that don't want to start a series because they're afraid somebody's going to abandon it. But at the same time, it's a catch-22, because if you don't buy the book, you don't get the money to make the other books, so you can't finish them. So, because that's the thing, is that people think that when you're your own publisher that, it's just so cheap and easy. Yeah, I got to buy editors. I got to get – I either have to buy my covers or I have to do my own covers. So, basically, I try to just – when I write, it's just whatever wants to come out. I don't write to market or any of that stuff. I've tried that stuff. That's not me. I'm over here doing my own thing. And it's like, I get an idea, I get excited, I start writing it. And then sometimes, I've got literally 50 works in progress at any one time. And I just rotate through them. People are like, how do you remember what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. I just do. It's probably the ADHD brain, because that's why you always see me jumping from one thing to the other. Like, it's like, I want to make cards. I want to make covers. I want to make a graphic novel. That's just shiny squirrel land where in my head. And it's whatever strikes the fancy. But when I've got and sometimes I'm just not motivated to do anything at all, because unfortunately I have to work a day job, and then I have a teenager and 4 cats and a husband and a house. And some days there's just nothing left but to go back to bed, you know, so.
Oh, God, yeah, I understand. Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
Well, Holly, next project we'll hear her announce tomorrow will be a new children's book series featuring shiny squirrels. That'll be the next project.
Oh, my husband wants me to make a children's book, and I'm like,
well, there you go.
I don't even think I can do that. But of course, now I said that about
universe
short stories
speaking.
Years ago.
Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, wow.
So.
Well, I honestly, I understand because I kind of do the same thing. I go with the momentum, and I don't have necessarily as 50 in progress at the same time like you do, but I do go with kind of where my rhythm is because I always feel that way. I can keep my, promise to bring out my best stuff to the readers, when I'm, I'm in that zone. And so, I do get that. Where, because I also have multiple series going on and I do kind of roll with, where my vibe is at the moment. And it did cause a delay for a couple because of some personal stuff, as far as like family loss that happened years back. And now I'm back on track with those. So, the vibe came back and I was able to get new titles written in two of those and they're in the pipeline. But it's, you're right. And you go where the fire is leading you. And then I think that is what drives you to some of your best work. And if you're not under some, deadline contract with like a, New York house or whatever, as an indie author, you have the freedom to kind of go that route. So that's a good thing.
That's what I wanted to ask is Shannon, why do you choose to self-publish over traditional publish or indie publishing? Why do you choose to do that?
Well, I started with poetry. I've been writing poetry for over 30 years. And when I was in college, one of my English professor that I like to torment, he was a poet and he was published. And I think I'd written something in one of those journals about poetry books or something, but he said it's really hard to get poetry published. And I entered this couple of contests and things and won things that I'm not even sure are legitimate, but hey, it's a certificate. So, yay, I've got one, you don't. So, but all of a sudden I was just like, so I got that, the poet market thing to look up all the publishers. This was back in like 2004, self-publishing wasn't really all that. It was the vanity press or it was, traditional.
Right.
And I didn't want to buy 10,000 books, with a horrendous cover or something. So I was like, I'm going to make my own book. And then I started researching and, now you can throw a rock and hit 12 of whatever you need. Back in 2005, I had to learn how to do the covers, the layouts, the formatting, how to upload them and all that stuff. And then, of course, you had to buy it. So my first book was a crazy title. It was Poetry for the Chronically Heartbroken and Depressed. And I made that book and I published it. Lulu was the only place that was really reasonable as far as price. And for a long time, I went through them. And then I just had that one book. And then I wrote a story. And then my best friend read it. And he, unfortunately, encouraged me, said it was great and all that stuff. So what do you do when somebody encourages you so much? I decided that, I'm going to publish this. So, and then I started. And I was like, I only have two books. So it just kind of... But the main reason I kept with the self-publishing, besides the I don't like deadlines because of how my brain is, I'm not the type of person, I don't have the cool neurodivergent skill of working really well under pressure. It doesn't click with me, so I'm wired a little bit different than that. So I'm very demanding, and I know what I want. And I'm a control freak. And it's just like, when you do it yourself, when you're the only person that's in the mix, there's no extra cooks in the soup to mess things up. There's nobody to argue with. So it's just easier for me because I can do it when I want. I can do whatever I want. I can hire whoever I want. if I don't like what my editor says, guess what? I don't have to listen to my editor. There's nobody telling me I have to do it a certain way. I don't like being told what to do. especially in something like this, you know, I understand that people that go traditionally published, you know, those places have to make money. And then another thing is when e-books come around and it became easier. I had a friend whose husband, they had, she was like, hey, he's going to publish an ebook. And I was like, what is an ebook? And that was the foray into it. And then it was like, all of a sudden you could just, I didn't have to make paper books. I didn't have to do all this crazy stuff. I could just put stuff up on the internet and sell it. So that was kind of like, and then it's just been a rabbit hole ever since, because then I started wanting to make covers for my books, which led to me getting into the 3D graphics and stuff. And it's like a three-headed hydra, you know, so it's just like it branches off into one thing or another. So but basically for me, I don't want to mess with the publishing through somebody else. I don't feel the need for it. You know, it just doesn't interest me. I mean, if that's what some people, that's all they wish to do, and that's great. But I just want to control everything on mine, and I want the final say, and I want the production schedule. And, you know, I do have one story in an anthology that was, you know, it went through jurying and all that stuff, and it got accepted. And that was it. I didn't need to do it ever again.
Well, we could say, it's so funny because I say, you know, I'm a closet writer. I'll eventually get some books out, but I am an award-winning poet like you. I have a piece of paper. Now maybe you know, I don't have a fancy trophy or anything like that, but me and Steve are award-winning poets. We're fish poets, haiku poets. We write fish haikus, and it's for this every year.
The King Oscar annual contest.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember that. It's like the fish stick company.
Yep.
They have the canned fish company. You know, from Norway.
Sardines.
And they have the greatest social media. They know me and Steven by name. It's funny. They text us. We get to try out new stuff. But me and Steve write all these poems, you know, during this contest. Close. Me and him both have got like second, you know, in the finalist thing. But yeah, we are award-winning poets. Yes, I'm a fish haiku artist. That's me. And I'm not playing.
I
got the paper.
I do want to mention, though, Shannon, the prize is a prize that both Holly and I covet. It's a pewter Viking longship is the first place prize. And it's gorgeous.
Well,
and because they're Norwegian, you know, and, you know, so we, you know, it's like Mad Max, the Thunderdome, you know, this is the mean streets of haiku, you know, it's so many enter, but only one can exit, you know, and it's, you put everything on the line.
Melon.
Yeah,
there's this dude named
guy,
Drew Mellon. Don't know who the hell he is, but we know his name, Drew Mellon, and he'll always get in there and try to.
He always seems to win.
We're always one step ahead.
He's got the fish haiku market lockdown.
Yeah,
right.
He tried.
But I will say I actually love like sardines and canned fish and all that, you know, and they've got a wide variety. I mean, I sound like I'm doing a commercial for them, but I actually like the company's products. They're very good, and I do like them, and they're kind of innovative, actually. They come out with a lot of cool stuff, but yeah, so it's fun, but their social media team is hilarious, but yeah, it's probably one of the more enthusiastic poetry contests you'll ever see. People just, you'll have to join next year. It's fun.
Well,
it is a lot of fun.
I'm not really sure I can write enthusiastic poetry. Everybody's like, boy, your poetry's kind of sad. And I'm like, what? No.
That's good stuff.
Sad?
Sad poetry. Yes.
I mean,
write sad poetry, too. I love sad poetry.
Yeah. I found one review on Amazon for my book, The Requiem for Dead Flowers. And it was like, let's see what they say. It's open, raw, honest, and it leaves her heart bloody on the floor. I'm like, well, all right. So, and then I had another friend read it, and she was like, why didn't you warn me? that this was gut-wrenching point. It's like, I didn't think it was that gut-wrenching, but okay. Yay. So, yeah, I apparently write very gut-wrenching poetry. It's just my thing. And my books are less gut-wrenching.
Well, you're making people feel things.
Yeah. Yeah. I had somebody read, like, one. I was at a place, and one of my friends read. So they picked up that book, and they read it. It was like, she's like, ooh, this put me back in a dark spot. I'm going to put this back down. I'm like, oh, gosh, please don't go to a dark spot.
So what is your favorite, like, topic to write? What's your favorite genre? I know you like hybrid, you know, genre, but what's your favorite? What do you have most fun with?
My biggest thing has always been, like, fantasy, like sword and sorcery. My tagline is women, weapons, magic. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I like the swords and the action, and but not like too much action. Like, I've got a friend that writes books, League of Elder, and I'm like, there's too much action in this. And he's like, there's not enough action in yours. And I'm like, well, we'll just have to disagree. It's like, he's got all these fight scenes, and I'm like, and then he's like, and your people just come in and blow things up. And I'm like, yeah, that's magic, you know? So, but I guess it's probably closest to sword and sorcery, but I also like more of like the urban fantasy, like modern day setting type stuff. So, but it seems like I can say, okay, this book is going to be this, and I can start writing it, and it's going to cross over the lines and zig and zag. And just like with Murder in Law 36, I started out with one very, you know, set idea. And then I started writing it, and the next thing I know, I had the Land of Faerie in there and, like, little critters and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, where did this come from? This was not in my original plan. I'm not much of a plotter, but I had the basic premise, and it just went left. Like, we're not going there. Mm-hmm. We're going down this way. So that's why I can't ever peg my stuff. So that's why I tell people, oh, I'm a speculative fiction writer. And you're just like, it's just all of it, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's fair. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I am.
And I changed my reader magnet for when you sign up to my newsletter. I changed it to be an e-copy of The Flavors of Fantasy, and I literally named it like that because it has all kinds of different types of short stories from me in it. And it also has all the, like, in all the anthologies, I let them have the story for a couple of years, and then I just decided, well, it's time for me to make money and use it for me. So I wrote one new story that was supposed to be a short story for the Bluegrass Writers Coalition for their anthology, and it just kept going and going and going, and it was like 15,000 words, so it was no longer a short story that would fit in their book. So I was just like, well, it's going to go in this new book. And then I put, like, all of the other anthology books, Scorpions of Justice, which was in Guarding Her Own from Balance of Seven. And then I've got The Phoenix Mage, which is a story I put in a book with a group I used to be in. And then there's a little short story I wrote in a gaming group. It's like two pages. And then I have the story that I wrote. It's called The Marrow. And it was kind of inspired by I like to get on Facebook and, you know, those memes that say, I wish somebody would write. And there's that one about the woman getting thrown off the ship, and as she's falling down, she turns into a mermaid and she comes back and kills people. And it's kind of the inspiration for it. I get ideas from Facebook memes.
Well, you are to get a plethora from mine then, because I'm the meme queen, man.
I don't know. I'm getting some ideas right here. I might start a heavy metal band and call it Scorpions of Justice and say we named the band after a Shannon McRoberts story. That's a pretty badass
awesome
band name. That's a pretty
I'll
awesome
pretty
band name right there.
Like, yeah, it really would be. You need to make some magnets with that on there, fridge magnets.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Or
like on a die cut.
Stickers.
A die cut.
Vinyl
a die
stickers.
Cut. Vinyl die cut scorpion kind of sticker with that. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, I can do that because I have a Redbubble.
Nice.
There you go.
Come
there
buy
you go.
Some
That's
at Imaginary,
thing.
Folks. All right,
yep,
folks, you heard
I'll,
it. Now
I'll
come and buy some from Shannon and Imaginary.
I'll buy one because, yep, I want it on my laptop. I'll buy one.
Well, I guess
awesome.
I'm just going to
I want one.
I guess I'm just going to have to pack up the car because I didn't get a table. I'm just kind of hanging out and not bringing anything.
Hey, there's always the parking lot. I mean, I'll have no table space. I mean, I guess we could put you in the corner somewhere. But, yeah, you know, you're going to have to pack up all this stuff, say, hey, you want to come out to the car? I'll make a deal.
I put my car in the tent.
I got something I want to show you in my trunk.
I'm sure somebody would let you hang out with them at the table a little bit, too, because you know so many people.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure
somebody
was there.
Probably.
But
yeah,
that, yeah,
you know.
You need to do that. That's actually, that would be a good seller. I love that. good suggestion, Ollie.
I'll just randomly stick stuff on people's tables. Be like, mm-hmm. What's this? I didn't write this.
Well,
oh, man, that's awesome. Now you have.
Yeah, somebody be willing to share some space, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Even one of those, you know, somebody.
I'm not sure I want to pack my giant box with me, though. That thing's heavy.
That thing is cool. It rolls.
It's so cool.
Rolls.
Yes.
It is
it's
so
called,
cool.
And for those that need to know, it's called a Milwaukee Packout. It's actually a toolbox thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is a modular system, and you buy all these little things that snap onto it, and you know, I think
yep.
they should sponsor me, but I don't know how
they
to
should.
Do that. So, you
because
know.
If people see how that works, I mean, it's perfect for authors and artists and
vendors. Yeah, you need
and
to be
and,
one of their spokespeople,
yeah.
honestly.
You do.
Yeah.
You
usually it's,
yeah.
you know, some dude selling tools and they have a YouTube videos and you can get a code off. And I'm like, it'd be really great for craft shows. And I really like the little boxes
easy.
That have the indented things and you can turn it over and like none of the stuff falls out of the things. I'm like, this would be great for beads
crazy.
And tiny things.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like,
but
what
crazy.
Are you? It's like, yeah. Cause I mean, most things that have a handle, your stuff flops all the way around, but these things are
right.
actually made to like hold the things.
It's like a
in
tackle box.
Cup. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like
a tackle
box.
Box,
but, and they're waterproof and they're shockproof and they're dustproof.
Freaking nuts.
Right.
And they're not cheap. I mean that rolling thing, the chest comes with the rolling thing. It's all made in one piece. It was like $150, but you can get it at like sometimes Home Depot has them on sale for bundles, and then you can buy them at Rural King, which is a farm store, which is also a great
Love
place to
Rural
buy
King.
Car batteries.
No, it's worth
and
it.
And squirrel corn.
Yeah. Every cent.
I get my corn there for my squirrels.
Ah. Well, if you ever need a car battery and you don't want to pay $200, go to Rural King and use their little book
really?
And find your car battery. But be sure you take a core with you because it's $25. So, in another life, I was a mechanic, and I know things.
Nice.
So,
very nice.
I'm a jack of all trades, a master of none. And I could do little things, you know, little things.
I don't know.
With the car.
Your culinary skills, I mean, you are chef
oh, okay.
caliber.
Well, I'll
Ollie.
Give you that.
Yeah. That's not being biased. That's actually a
yeah.
thing for you.
Cooking's not my thing. You don't want to
yeah.
really
oh.
have me experiment. Yeah, no.
Well, then you
cooking,
should just come
no.
and have dinner with us, and Holly will take care
awesome.
Of that part.
Okay. That's cool.
Then you can vouch for what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That would be awesome if you become the first author that's sponsored by that case company. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
If anybody's listening and knows anybody at Milwaukee, you know,
mm-hmm.
hook me up.
Right.
Put in a good word.
Yep.
Put
in a good word.
Yeah.
I am going to have to get a smaller box because that giant one I bought that goes all the way up to the handle, I am too short to handle it. So I'm going to have to get a smaller box so it's less weight on me. Because, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, it's plumb full of everything. I'm like a traveling, you know, trade show in there.
Well, yeah, when you do a lot of shows,
I could not believe.
Yeah, when you do a lot of shows, and some shows you only get to pull your vehicle up just to load out stuff real quick, and you got to move, and you don't have that much time. Having the logistics of a good system like you have is a huge weight off your shoulders at certain shows and big conventions, and bigger events, and things like that. I mean, yeah, absolutely. You're wise. You're wise. You've done your homework.
Yeah.
But yeah, because you do a lot of things. I know that.
I do have a question.
Is
the fact that you do sell all the other cool stuff that you sell, your bookmarks, your glow-in-the-dark dragons, and all that stuff, have you found that does help to sell your books?
You know, a lot of that stuff was new at the convention, where I see you all here in Frankfurt. I think it helps to draw people over there when you have shiny things hanging up. And I don't think I had my jewelry stand. Like, I've acquired a weird jewelry stand thing to put the stuff on. So now the bookmarks hang off of stuff. And, you know, they're in their little shiny bags and stuff. And then I started piecing some of my own together because I had a friend who sent me all kinds of charms because she was cleaning out her crafting. And boy, I've got all kinds of things now to make stuff with. But I think having a variety of things, it either makes me look like the crazy lady in the corner or somebody that, you know, stands out. But a lot of people stopped by and were looking. They liked the bookmarks. They liked the jewelry. They liked all these little weird knickknacks. And the fun thing was is I put together those writing kits, and I almost sold out of those. I mean, I only had like three of each, but I didn't know that I was going to sell any of them. And people were like,
"Wow,
I want one of each." I'm like, okay. It was like, this was a spur of the moment thing. But yeah, so.
What? Gives you range. It gives you the ability to make sales at your table to people that are not your readers or not necessarily your target audience. It gives you the ability to make some revenue there, and that helps some days when you have to make back a table fee or whatever. That's inevitable.
Yeah.
Because I had in the past, I mean, when I was doing a lot of shows, now with the convention and everything, I've pared back. I'm going to try to do more. But I used to sell buttons. I have a button maker. I used to sell buttons and stuff. It helps. I mean, sometimes it paid the gas for the way home. I mean, it does help. You know, you have those extra things. Yeah, it can't hurt.
And like you said, it does draw people to your table because they see all that stuff, and then they're like, "Oh, well, this is cool. What's this book about?" You know, and I think it does help. That's why I was curious to see, you know, if you have found that does help to actually sell more books.
Yeah, well, that was the first. Usually it's just, that was literally the first time that I had, like, all that stuff. Typically for me, it was just the art, the packaged art, and the big folder that I hardly ever have anywhere to put. I have that 11x17 portfolio that I hardly ever have anywhere to put. And, you know, so everything was new, but that show, that even though it was only, like, 10, 15 minutes at a time of selling, I made the most money ever in all the times of doing the show.
Yeah, you were selling like crazy.
Yeah, that was a good
show.
Yeah,
and it was just like, I actually think, because I bought an advertisement in the book and I actually made money, like it paid for everything, like including the ticket that I bought for the conference. So
nice.
I wasn't
well
out
done.
Of pocket. That's the first time that's happened. Probably the other best show I had was last year. Pulse Warrior Library puts on the Gathering of Authors, and I usually go there because I like to say the things that are, you know, close to home, and I live in Frankfurt, so Frankfurt things it is, and the library bought, like, one copy of everything that I had, so, like all this money from the library.
Very cool.
Okay.
Very
sure.
cool.
And
good on them.
Then
cool.
you sneak in.
Yeah.
Then
awesome.
You sneak in there and you take pictures of your book on the shelf like a weirdo.
That's okay. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's
and
cool.
And then I caught my daughter my daughter had some of her friends down there when I was at a Bluegrass Writers meeting, and they were out there looking. One of my books was on the shelf, and she was, like, showing people, and I'm like, oh, that's your mom? I'm like, yeah, I have a book in the library. Yay. So
they're like, that's so cool. Cool, mom.
Well, I know at the Conference of Writers, we had the high energy corner with you and me and Holly.
Yes,
it was definitely the energy corner with the loudest corner. And we had Frank X. Walker, who is a poet laureate in Kentucky. He's just amazing. And he's a great guy. I mean, he was so nice. Really enjoyed meeting him. But he's one of their key guests. But yeah, he drew the short straw, and they put him next to us.
That was fun. It was like, here you go. Because it was funny because somebody else was sitting there at the beginning, and then I guess they moved to be next to one of their friends, and then that was like the only table left by the time that he got there. So it was like, surprise, you get to sit by us.
That was fun. And then we saw Holly and I,
lo and behold, Holly and I
saw him featured in a cooking show where he talked about his Appalachian concept, and they were talking about Appalachia in the episode and cooking and food stuff. And they had a whole segment with Frank, a whole segment, and it's like on Netflix, I believe.
We said that to that guy.
That was awesome.
Well, because it was funny because I went to...
Crystal Wilkinson was in there, too. Yeah, she was in there, too, in that episode. That was awesome.
She was she was at our first conference.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah, she's some good guests. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Jenny does a good job. Yeah, tell you, spearheading that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's... Ooh, she's something.
Yeah,
but
So, and we've got lots of great things hopefully in the work for the future. There'll be another conference next year. Just
better be.
Yep. Oh,
we love
and then we are going to have a festival of books, which will be the Bluegrass Writers, and it's going to be in conjunction with the Candlelight thing here in Frankfort, and we'll be downtown.
Cool.
So we're hoping that lots of foot traffic. Because that's when, like, all the shops are open. Because, you know, in Frankfort, things close at 4:30 because, you know, it's not like the people live here or anything. Not like I want to go shopping after I get off work. You know, downtown is closed up, and it's like, I still live here, you know.
Yeah.
I work for the
Frankfort's
state, too,
nice.
But I
love
still live
Frankfort.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
Frankfort is a beautiful place.
Some of the things just aren't open. You know, they cater to the people that come in to work for the state, and then they kind of like close up shop, or they're like open at like odd times or not on the weekend. I'm like, well, I might like to shop here too, but I'm not going to take off work to do it.
right.
Well, you know, the White Castle is open. You know, the White Castle is always open. At least that.
Yes. Well, except for
that
time that they were remodeling it. Yeah.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, but it ain't the White Castle no more. They painted ours. It's like eggshell. Steve, we were
it's
sitting
like
at Captain D's there, Dana's across from White Castle, and Steve said, he said, it ain't white no more. And I said, well, it ain't.
It's not a white castle.
I never noticed that before, but it's not a white castle.
It's like the off-white. They're going to rename it the off-white castle.
It's a discount version.
As long as they keep the sliders the same standard, I'll be okay, because I do get a crave every once in a while. So Frankfurt's a nice town, and it's got a good art scene, and it's only 20 some minutes from, you know, south side of Lexington. It's not far. I mean, it's really a good location. It's really kind of a gem, to be honest with you. I mean, it's easy to get to if you're from Lexington or just around here. So, I mean, I think it's good. I hope you do more events because it's a great location.
Yeah, I hope we do, too. You know, there's lots of artists and authors and people here. It's just, we don't have the groups and stuff like they do in bigger places. But this, you know, for the last 2 years, we since we started putting on the conference and all that stuff and having, like, you know, events and stuff and trying to do stuff out in the community, we've gotten a lot bigger. At one point, it was just like, because we used to meet at Panera, and then it was just like we got bigger, so we had to move to the library. And then at one point,
right. It
was like right after that first conference, it was like every seat was full in there. And we were like, are we going to have to find somewhere bigger to go? But, you know, not everybody can make it into every meeting because a lot of our people are from surrounding areas too. So, you know, a lot of them come from Lexington, and some of them come as far away as from like Danville and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm just glad we have a group here because the first writing group I was a part of, it was this little app that was like called Meetup or something. I don't remember. It was very short-lived, but like you could put like groups and stuff on it. And there was actually a group at the library, and that's where I met Bill Wurtenberger a long time ago.
Yeah.
And
because
I remember when he was first trying to get into one of the anthologies, and can't remember if I told him about you all or if he just happened to find it, because he's into the sword and sorcery like Conan stuff. And
yep,
I think
yep.
that
yeah,
thing
is.
That he was in was the sword and sorcery. So he and we used to have this fabulous comic shop, and it was called Moonlight Comics. And there was a great guy named Jay that ran it, and he had to sell it. And it was sad because it's now not a comic shop anymore. It's a card game shop, and it's not. But we had a creator's day, and he was there, and like I met a bunch of people that I'm still friends with, phenomenal artists and stuff, and people that are putting out their own comic books. And it's crazy how many people I see that I've networked with from there. But yeah, he brought that anthology with him, and then I found out he worked with somebody that I knew. And I was just like,
yeah,
you know Bill, like so.
That's cool.
Small world. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that group kind of fell apart because everybody was in different, I guess, stations of it, and some of us were. Yeah, there was me, and then I had like all the stuff done, and then there were other people that were just wanting like critiques of their stuff. But thing about the Bluegrass Writers is they have started a critique group that meets on a different day, where you can get your stories like read and critiqued and that feedback stuff. But again, that's not my theme, but I'm glad that it's there because there's a lot of people that want that feedback and stuff.
Sure.
And I think it's called the Fiction Game. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's interested in that, they're open and free. And I think it's on the Bluegrass Writers Coalition website. So, but I just, it's nice to have people that are doing what you're doing. And it's cool when you do events and stuff and people are like, what do you mean? Yeah, I could do this too. You know, there's so many people. The whole reason I started like one of my series about, you know, you wrote a book, so now what? It's because I had a friend who, a girl who became a friend who, she had tried to talk to a bunch of different authors at like one of the local author events, and she didn't know how to do a lot of stuff. And they were just mean. I like somebody about copyright. That's one of the biggest things. And they wouldn't talk to her about it. I'm like, you couldn't just tell her to go to the website? I mean, I don't know why some people can't figure it out because,
amazing.
Like I said, back in the day, I had to figure it all out when it wasn't really wide known. But, you know, I'm more than happy. But in this one group I'm in, like, it comes up all the time. I'm like, well, do I have to file copyright? And all of a sudden, it's like, no, you don't have to file it, but this is why you do it, and this is what you do. And you know, I can't imagine somebody being so stuck up, but, you know, I did kind of meet one of those people at one of those gatherings of authors, and they were stuck up. And I'm like, you're from Frankfurt, too. And it's like, you know, that's part of the reason why I wanted the bestseller
status.
I see
both group kind of groups, and you see that.
Karma's going to be involved, though.
Yeah.
They're not going far.
Yeah.
If you don't help others and want to help others and share what you know a little. I mean, you don't have to share every little secret, but you know you want to share and help people. You know, because you got to think. Well, wouldn't you have wanted that? You know, someone to do that with you
when you were starting out. Mm-hmm. And karma, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but it does come back tenfold, I'm telling you. If they're mean and rude to people like that, that are just asking for help, and they don't have to sit and talk to them for 30 minutes. I mean, if you don't want to talk to them, just say, well, hey, check out this website or check out that, like you said, and send them on their way. But at least you get them a little tidbit of info to carry on with.
Or send them to somebody that knows.
Or go talk to so-and-so or text so-and-so, you know.
And that's kind of like I kind of rebranded some things, and because I can't fit all my irons in one barrel. So I have a website that's called Rogue Goddess Productions, because that kind of – I kind of went from author, artist, poet to – well, I've got, like, videos and TikToks, and it's just, like, it's more like a production thing. You know, you all know about all the irons and fire and all the things you got going on. So it's like, what do you call yourself in? So I, like, open that up because
a creative
I'm not going to be, like...
A content creator.
I'm not able to offer all kinds of, like, I'm better suited for, like, people that don't know what they're doing. Like, I can help them get into that, and that's the kind of the consulting I do. Like, I can connect you to the people you need to be connected to. It's like, but I've already done the legwork. It's like, I know where to go, because, you know, there's so much stuff out there that they just want to take your money, and you don't know. I mean, those people that there was one person at one of those places that she spent $10,000 on getting her book, and it wasn't even buried.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm just
Holly
like,
and I've saved
fun.
Holly and I've saved many people from blowing $3,000 to $5,000. On things like that.
And when people are like, oh, it costs all this money to self-publish, I'm like, no, it doesn't. Well, you want to put your money first, you want to put it into a cover, and it doesn't have to be
covers, editors,
please do not buy your cover on Fiverr, because those people steal my friends' covers.
We found years ago, we found this wonderful artist, Olivia, Pro Designs.
Yeah.
We love her.
We've worked with her. Yeah, for years. Found her there. But since then, I work with her straight, but she's really awesome. And it's a wilderness, though. You're going to run into the type that Shannon's talking about.
Back in the day, kind of like Craigslist was reputable for a while, and then it got popular. Mm-hmm. Fiverr is full. Mm-hmm. Anywhere somebody can try to scam you, they're going to scam you.
Mm-hmm.
And
once
they find somewhere popular, I mean, even on LinkedIn, I'm getting like these people that are sending me messages. It's like, you can't even speak fluent English, and you're trying to sell me
a social media
package?
I get so much on there.
I get hit on LinkedIn.
She gets hit on
by people from countries I've never even heard of. I'm like, Steve, where the hell is this? I don't even know where this country is. Steve always does. He's like, well, it's, you know, near Yugoslavian something, something, you know. And I'm like, well, okay, whatever. But, yeah, I do. I get some wild stuff. But I love LinkedIn. I do.
Yeah. Well, I took Stephanie Fager's class on LinkedIn after our conference. I did all this stuff, and I don't think I'm done optimizing it, but you know, it's more there. But I get, like, you know, I had a message from somebody, I'm like, oh, and then they just kept talking to me, and I'm like, this is just like one of those Instagram messages where you're going to try to sell me something. But it's like, I don't need you to sell my book.
Well, you just don't talk back to it. Just say thank you and just close it out. That's what I do.
Well, some of them are so, they try to slide in there and be slick, and it's like the fourth or fifth one. It's like, so, you know, so I'm just like, I don't have the time for this, you know.
Yeah. Right.
This one person, it was like, well, I see that your books aren't selling well. And they kept saying like weird things. I was like, so which book are you talking about? Because I've got about 20 pubs.
Right.
And he was like, and then he went back to the website and just grabbed like one. I think he grabbed the first one he saw.
Oh, my God.
Like Dewan said in the chat, he says, I have some waterfront property in Arizona, ..
Yeah. But, you know, and I've got a lot of cover artist friends, and, I mean, people just go and, like, straight up, they steal the covers that people, like, even when they do a cover reveal, and they somehow get the words off of it and put other stuff on it, or they say that they made it. And, of course, you know, if you don't know that artist, I mean, I can look at my friend's covers, and I can pick them out and say, this is you, and this is you, and this is you. That's because I stare at them a lot.
Yeah,
somebody scrolling through is
going to
be off and be like, yeah. Somebody that's scrolling through and be like, oh, my gosh, this is beautiful. And they want to, they totally charge $5? Yeah, don't, no. Because either they're
don't do it.
Never going to, yeah, either they're never going to send you a cover, or what they send you is going to be so lackluster. But, you know, so that's kind of like why I have that little side gig of where I'm like a consultant. I know places where you can get stuff cheap. That's my whole thing. It's like, I know where you can do something to get something cheap. It's like, you know, the QR codes and all that crazy stuff
still
that
good
I've
quality.
Got.
You know.
Yeah. You know, I do stuff on the cheap, and then I, you know, I buy a lot of lifetime deal things, and it's like, you know, I have Social Monias is this big scheduling platform, and I think it's like $20-$30 a month. Yeah, I bought it when they were a little itty bitty startup from AppSumo for like $49, and it's like, yeah, so you all should have bought it when I told you to buy it, but you know, it was great when I had to do that USA Today list run, because you have to schedule all those promos. And it's like, back in 2012, I quit on social media. Like, I had 4,000 followers on Twitter. And for whatever reason, I had some influence pull, and people were sending me free stuff. And then I was just like, I'm sick of scheduling these things, because you had to do it by hand. Because they didn't have the schedulers back then. And if they did, it was a ridiculous amount of money.
Right. Yep.
And I think Hootsuite like was only like so many posts. So I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I just like stopped, and I didn't do any promo or writing or anything for like 5 years. And I was just like, got so burned out. So if we had had the scheduler thing, you know, I didn't come back with until 2018 when I published. Was it 2018? I started writing again. I took some classes from a person, and I got back into it, and it's like I wrote like 3 books in like a few months, and that was the Monster Hunter Tales, and I released To Kill a Siren on March 15th, I think it's 2019, and that was like the best book that I sold, because I had done all this promo and all this stuff and all this stuff. Yeah, I sold like 200 books in one day. From the promos that I had run at 9/10 piece. So, you know, obviously I didn't make the money back, but I was like 6,000 out of the Amazon overall store like that day after the promo ran.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the coolest thing I've done, you know. I write what I want is I want people to read my book and be excited about what I wrote. And tell me about how excited they are about what I wrote. That's all I want. I don't want millions of dollars. I mean, I have a day job. I just want people to enjoy stuff. And, you know, I write books that I wish had been available when I was younger, even though I really write them for old ladies like me now. So, you know, that 80s girl, the Oregon Trail era, who didn't have, we had a choice of like Red Sonja and She-Ra. And everybody else was a sidekick. You know, we didn't have the Zenas or the Fuffies yet. That came later. We had Wonder Woman, but she, you know, wasn't that big. And even when the Marvel movies started, it was like Black Widow was always just an add-on to everything. It's like, why can't we have, you know, a female lead something, you know? And really, when I first started writing, my friend was like, where are the men? I'm like, we don't need them. Book. So it's just like hardly any guys. And
we
like
got
some of my
men. What are you talking about?
It's like we don't need them for this book. You know,
we got Amazons. We don't need men.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, I started off with Greek mythology. That mythology and fables and fairy tales, and it's just I like to take all those things and just kind of mush them together like a meatloaf of fantasy. Greek mythology is always been a thing for me. And I remember in seventh grade, they'd give you those little coloring sheets with like Zeus and all that stuff, and it would tell you a little blurb about them. But when you would get the girls, there was never really much anything on there. Or you might not even get a girl one. I'm like, do we not have any women? Do we have any girls to color? So that's kind of like, and I didn't know until I was almost 40 that it was about the representation part. It's like, why do I not like to play video games if I can't play a girl? When I want to play something for escapism, I want to imagine being that character, and I'm not a dude. I don't want to imagine being a dude. I'll watch some of those things. It's like, I want my badass women. I want my Wonder Woman. And people are like, oh, these people are overpowered and da-da-da. Like, I'm sorry. Is it over 9,000? Because have you watched Dragon Ball Z? All those people are overpowered. Have you watched any anime? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm used to. Like, I'm sorry if you find them overpowered and you think it's like a, I don't know, a convenient something or another escapism. It's like, you know, I just write them like that. It's like, I like superpowered characters.
Yeah, write what you want to write. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, and then I have people that, like, complain about stuff, like trivial stuff. I had one guy that was like, that person couldn't have had that conversation in the time, but he had no, I was like, but you had no problem with the dragon shifter on page 10? You're going to give me grief about a scene and how it's not timed right on a magical, mystical island in a made-up world with some dragon people.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand. And then, of course, you have those people that get into the physics of dragons and the physics of this. I'm like, dragons ain't got no physics. Dragons are dragons. I'm not doing any of that stuff. But there's those hardcore people that are really into it, and I'm just like, I write fantasy because, you know what, I can make stuff up and can't nobody say anything about it. As long as I don't break my own rules, then, you know, the story goes.
There you go.
So. That's it. You write what you love. And representation, and like Dwan said in the chat, representation is so important. And I do want to say, you know, anybody that knows me knows I'm quite large. I am an Amazon, and I've always been an Amazon. I was always bigger than the other kids in school. I was always the tallest. I was, you know, and I didn't have representation. Like you were saying, all we had, you know, all I had was Wonder Woman, which I didn't care for that much. I loved Batman, Spider-Man, you know, all this.
Yeah.
But where was the women villains or characters or heroes, you know?
Yeah.
There just wasn't, and it sucked, you know, because, I wanted to wear the underwear that had the Batman and Spider-Man and stuff. My mom wouldn't let me, but, you know, we didn't have cool underwear for us, you know, and it sucked.
Underoos, remember those? Underoos. Yeah,
old school. But see, we didn't have underoos, Steve. We didn't have them. It was only boys. It was only boys for a long time.
We had the Barbie dolls, but, you know, and I liked my Barbie dolls. You know, I remember going to Winn-Dixie and buying my She-Ra dolls. And then because Frankfurt was so little back then, most of my stuff came from the JCPenney catalog during Christmas when my grandmother would order me stuff because I couldn't get it here in town. You know, I couldn't get my Jim and the Holograms. I couldn't get my Pizzazz doll because, you know, we had Rinky Dink Walmart that was non-superstar.
Right.
And couldn't get it.
Let me say something, though. I think they also made assumptions about mail readers because I liked Red Sonja. I like She-Ra. I like those characters a lot.
You like that now.
I mean,
Raiden Valkyrie.
Well, Raiden Valkyrie is my key fame. You know, one of my favorite characters to write, if not my favorite character to write is Raiden Valkyrie. But back in the day, I was starved for more Red Sonja type characters. I loved them, and so I think they even made assumptions about the male audience too. I mean, a lot of us wanted those characters.
I think that's why I probably got into comic books so much, because I walked into the comic store and they had Lady Death. I was obsessed with Lady Death. And then during the early, I guess it was the late 90s, early 2000s, is when I was hanging out in the comic shop, and I would always talk to the owner because I was in college, so I'd come in at weird times and he would be there. And this was Moonlight Comics back when Steve owned it. many years ago. It was also great then, but he would just have like, he would just give me all these things. So it was like, there's just all these titles that were all women centric, you know, and the Lady Death had a bunch of them. And of course, then they filed bankruptcy and they stopped and couldn't get them. But there was all kinds of, you know, women centered comics that weren't mainstream. They were, this is like something about a moo comic. I don't know. There was some comic. It was a cow or something. I don't remember it. I have to dig it out sometimes. But he would just save all that stuff for me. And like all the action figures, because even back then, I couldn't get action figures. Like you could get McFarlane figures. That was about the only one. But there would be like one Angela, one some strange thing, you know. And couldn't even really get safe. And my number one thing, and if you sign up for my newsletter, you'll hear the Boohoo story about how when I was growing up, I liked G.I. Joe. But you know what my favorite character was besides the Baroness?
Yep.
It was Scarlet. You know who had an action figure of Scarlet? Not me, because I couldn't get one.
I'll just say, I never
You know who finally got one on clearance at GameStop the other day? I got I got the... It's the Snake Eyes G.I. Joe Classified Series Scarlet, and she actually looks like a girl, unlike the toys I had in the 80s that didn't look like girls at all. You know, ugly Princess Leia lives on. I snatched this up so quick, and, you know, before that I had gotten I loved Game of Thrones until they ruined it. And, you know, I've got my Daenerys with her dragon. I've got I got her on clearance at GameStop. I'm like, I'll take her. And
very
finally,
cool.
Her arm snapped off. Yeah, her arm snapped off the other day, and I'm very upset about that. But I guess I'll have to figure out how to hodgepodge that back
repair.
On there. But, I couldn't get things like that. So that's why, you know, now that I'm older and I can buy random weird things, I've got all those things, and like I went through a Star Wars phase when Leia in the slave outfit came out and all that stuff, and it actually was like a decent character back in when Star Wars was starting back up. Like I had those, and like I had all the girl ones. So I was just playing it with a girl. I was collecting it, and you know I had the Barbie doll ones that have come out with like the BB-8 and all that stuff, you know, like Rey and the chick from the one where she blows up in the end. I had like all those, like, so anything like with Leia or anything like that. And those are the things I like. And then my mom bribed me to watch Star Wars because she said it has a princess with a gun. I was like, okay, that's the only way I watch Star Wars, because I was so very little when Star Wars was out on VHS. And she was trying to get me to watch it. And I was just like, no, it's stinky boys. Like, even then, I was like, no, I don't want to watch that. So it has a princess with a gun. So then I watched it. It's like, you know, it was like, and then that's like, and I like seeing that the franchise, you know, gave her a bigger role there to the end. And we've got more girls in there, even though you have those haters that want to complain about stuff like that. And they complain about the people, you know, being people of color being on there, or, you know, a different ethnicity. And it's like
gender. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that everybody in the galaxy is white guy. So, you know, you don't have a problem with the weird person with horns coming out the back of their head. And that blue guy playing the whatever that instrument is, but you have a problem with an Asian actor playing a pivotal role in one of these. Like, I don't understand. And it's just, I don't know. I just blame it on stinky boys, because it's probably them that are mad that the girls are and all the stuff. And the remake of He-Man that they had on Netflix, and that everybody was like, oh, this is awful, blah, blah, blah. No, it was perfect. It was what it should have been in the 80s. Because I was a big Tila fan, so, you know, you know, it's happening, but it's like, dang, I'm going to be 44 this year, and it's just now kind of happening, you know.
Tell me about it. I'm 49, so, yeah, I know. I've seen all this, and I said these poor, fragile people that are griping about all this, and I don't agree in shoehorning,
now is like shows and different stuff like that. You shouldn't have a checklist and shoehorn just to appease your audience, but you need to be more diverse. There needs to be diversity and everything. Not all the people in the space are going to be white men, you know, or are all Caucasian. There's purple people, blue people, there's black people, there's Asian people, you know, there's all different races, which I think Star Trek, they did get on the right path when, like, the Next Generation, that's always my favorite Star Trek, is the Next Generation. But they did have more diversity within their characters, and they started including that more, which I did appreciate, you know, especially with sci-fi, because I'm like, come on, people. You know,
and that's the thing.
Just what you're representing, you know, and they did have, you know, strong female characters, and I'm glad, you know, Star Trek later on had the captains that were female, and different things. But Picard is still my captain. I can't help it. Picard will always be my captain.
Yeah, it was for me. I watched the original Star Trek because, you know, my grandfather watched it, so I laugh at it now. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is hokey. But of course, the other day I went back and tried to watch Red Sonja, and I'm like, I better leave this in nostalgia land because this is kind of not up and stuff. It's kind of like when you go back and play an 8-bit video game. It's like, no,
it's still fun. Still fun though.
Yeah, but
I still have fun going back playing those old games.
Yeah, but you know, I don't understand why a lot of our stuff is just so set on not being diverse, you know, having representation for people. It's like, it's fine. It's just like the whole thing over The Little Mermaid. I told somebody, I said, Little Mermaid was the first Disney movie that came out when I was a kid, and she was my princess. I remember going to that movie with Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. And I think I was 9 or 10 when those come out. And those were my jam. My daddy took me to them on a Sunday. And I had Ariel, this, that, and the other. I have no problems with, you know, the fact that they cast, you know, that African-American lady in it. And they changed some of the things. I don't understand why people have such a hard time. Why? I just don't understand.
It's
like,
because
it's still
a
the
lot
same
of them
story.
They feel that it's shoehorning, which some of it is to a point, but the point is, why rehash all the older stuff? Why can't you bring out new, like, African-American characters from a story and make a whole new story and share a whole new, you know, a story with everybody?
New movies. Movies lately. It's like, they're all remakes. I'm like, why are we?
I know.
Oh, that's what I'm so angry at. Remake. Yeah, come on.
I don't care who they ask. It's the reboot factor that bugs me.
Yeah, there's some stuff that they just should not remake. I mean, it's like they were talking about, I mean, they remade like the Dark Crystal stuff and made this new stuff, and I'm like, I don't know. I want to keep my nostalgia memory about what I had. And you know, they were talking about messing with the never-ending story, and I'm like, no, you do not mess with the 80s stuff. You leave that stuff where it lies. There is stuff out there that people have written that is great, that deserves to put into the screen somewhere, you know? I'm tired of watching. I know people love their tropes and their safe spots and stuff, you know, like familiar stories, but sometimes we like to have new stuff that's not, you know, a 75th reboot of Batman. And I'm like, can you just pick something new?
Right.
I mean, you know, even DC had more than those three characters, people. It's like, you know, come on. It's like, you pick something. I mean, you know, and then you want to redo X-Men and all this stuff, and I'm like, why? Can you just make something new?
No.
It doesn't have to match up, because when people were doing those comics, and that's the one thing why I hate, like, plot holes and stuff, they would just, like, when a story started getting itself in the corner, they would just be like, oh, it was a dream, or they would just stop writing that one and go somewhere else, and it's like nothing ever matched up. Like, between one arc and the other, you had no idea what's going on, and if you were stuck just watching the cartoon, like, quit showing it. It's like, what happened, you know? Like, there was no going back and getting, like, the whole season and watching it and understanding. But it's one thing about comic books that I didn't like from the 80s, because they always seem to have these disjointed stories. And I'm like, so, you know, I don't understand why the movie people are like, oh, it all has to match up. And it's like, when they got rid of the S.H.I.E.L.D. series, and they're, oh, it doesn't fit into our, it doesn't have to fit in there. I mean,
no.
Yeah, there's going to be those people that pick it apart and like, oh, this isn't, you know, canon. And da-da-da. You've got too much time on your hand if you analyze that. Like, this is for enjoyment, you know, and it goes in one eyeball for me and out the other, and it gives me a break. And I'm just, you know, there are things that I really, really get into. You know, there's one anime that above all others, you know, I liked Fairy Tail. Of course, if you realize, if you've ever seen what Fairy Tail is, it focuses on a female lead. And, mm-hmm. you know, that whole thing. And then, you know, they said they weren't ever going to continue it, but then they did the 100 years and they I think he just finished doing the manga part of it, but it's so far behind for me to get like English translations of the stuff, because, you know, I can't read Japanese. Sorry. I can't read his Twitter feed because it's in Japanese. And,
right.
I just look at the pictures that he posts. Like, well,
right.
But you know, I mean, they're talking about making another anime, you know, that is like, why? I guess it's just the anime stuff seems to be, you know, more progressive and newer and not just rehashing the same things. I mean, I don't see too many of these animes that I've watched get remade. I see them getting continued. I see them having new arcs made. So I don't understand why we don't have new movies, new TV shows, new something, because, you know, this is not really any movies that I've wanted to go to watch. The first one that I went to watch since before the pandemic was the Spider-Verse movie that just came out. My daughter wanted to go with her friend.
See that. I want to see that. Was it good?
So, good. But here's the thing. My daughter and her friend were introduced to a cliffhanger because, you know, they grew up in a whole time when she got into finally started watching the Marvel movies, you know, we had them all. There was no cliffhanger.
Right.
You know, you could watch the next one. Yeah, that's a big old fat cliffhanger at the end of that one. And it stopped, and her friend said it was like, that's it? What happened? And it's like, that's leading you into movie two and probably three. And she was like, what?
Right.
No, this is horrible. I wouldn't have come to this if I'd known. I'm like, well, that's why we went to the $5 showing on a Tuesday.
That's it. It wasn't
a full story. You know, like the first one that they had out with Miles and Gwen, it was kind of like a full story. Like there was no cliffhanger. That's what they're used to. But this is full on. They're going to make another one and probably a third one. And probably milk
it
for as much as they can.
Because you anticipate. It's just the same way with your writing a book series. You don't want to just close it out completely after every title. You want to leave a little taste, a little cliffhanger, you know, because you want them wanting more. They're going to come back for more.
Yeah.
And that's the whole premise of it.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it.
I understand that from a writer's perspective, but as a person, you know, and I think part of it is that we've gotten kind of into a binge watching society with the stuff that we've, you know, we all have Netflix and Hulu.
Watch the binge. Oh, I'm a binger.
The instant,
I'll admit it.
Yes,
the instant
Holly
gratification.
Does.
Like I turned on the Bridgerton, the one about the Queen. I think it was like 6 or 7. I like watched that in a day, and I was like, what do you mean it's over? And I'm shaking the phone going, is there more? Like, what the,
I know.
You just, like, feel more, so let
more.
Down.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what Holly and I do with what we do in the Shadows and Letterkenny. They're short episodes anyway, and we blow through them, like, immediately, and then we're depressed.
And it sucks, because then we're like, oh, my God, now we got to wait another year.
wait another year.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I really like
do it every
The Witcher.
Time.
Yeah, I really liked The Witcher, but it was like, I was watching those.
Yeah.
And
then
it was like waiting forever, and then they brought out the next, and then I'm like, what do you mean you're replacing The Witcher guy? That's not going to go over well. And I'm like,
right.
Do you think that's what's feeding the influx of people wanting serial fiction? Do you think it's the binge watching that's actually tapped into something there, and that's why people like, you know, doing the serial fiction?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I know, like, my first experience with serial fiction was webtoons, and if you don't know, but if you've ever heard of Lore Olympus, that's a big comic that has taken off, but it's like a weekly, some of them are weekly, and some of them are once a month or something. It's independent comic people that are putting their stories out, and you get to read it for free. But if you want to read ahead, you pay tokens. And I think that's kind of monopolizing on that binge read, because it's like, if you really, really, really got to see what happens next, you don't have to wait. You know, it's not like next week turns same back channel, you know, it's not any of that.
Right.
So it's like, you can wait. Now, I have bought many, many little token packages because I didn't want to wait. And then I read everything really quickly, and then I'm out of stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, this is sad. So now I'm back to just kind of reading like one
a
week.
I'll have to write something now.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, it's like, well, now I'm sad and depressed, and I guess I'll have to work on my own stuff. So I'll write something. You know, and I think that you can get kind of like, you know, if you have enough of those things out in the future, you can pay the tokens and read further and get your instant gratification. But of course, it only goes so far. But then you also have the people that wait, because, you know, I grew up with TV. There was no, you know, you had to time those commercial breaks to run for your snacks in the bathroom, and
go pee,
you know, it had to sit through horrible commercials, and you know, there was no, and they would leave you on a cliffhanger. It was like, no, what's gonna happen? You have to wait like a whole week. And sometimes when it was like, you know, on their holiday break, it's like, I gotta wait a month for this stuff. So, you know, and then once this stuff started coming out, like, and we were on it for like the first, I guess, was it six seasons that they had of that? The first
six
four, we
seven.
Were on it all the time. You know, we were on it. But we didn't have cable. I had quit paying for cable because it was annoying. So we had like Hulu and Netflix and stuff. But so it would air. And then we could watch it on like Hulu or something like the next day. And that actually ended up being bad, because then we started going, well, we don't have to, you know, it wasn't like you have to watch it now. You know, you didn't make time to watch it. So you would get caught up when you got caught up. And then we kind of stopped watching it, and then it like ended, and I don't think we've ever went back to watch it. We would have to like start from like the very beginning and
start
all
over.
Yeah. So, you know, but we never really got those last two, because he would come home and he would be tired, and I'd be tired, and I wouldn't do something else. And then, you know, it was just like, well, we can watch it later, you know, and it's like,
right,
okay, now what? It's like, it's later, and we haven't watched 42 of these episodes, and we have no clue what's going on. And then I was like, hey, did you know this is ending? So we got...
Now we got to go back. I don't even know what was going on.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Oh.
And that's the thing that annoys me. Is like, I bought Peacock so I can watch Chicago ER thing. And it annoys me when they have, like, all those recaps. I'm like, I know what happened. I watched it 30 seconds ago. So
I don't
cut it all out,
I hate that.
You
I'm
know?
Like, skip.
And then you skip it, and then it's like, oh, but now we're going to show you some more commercials. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, can you show me some different commercials? It's like the same four commercials for, like, this entire time. And I just, stop, please, stop showing me the same four commercials. And sometimes they'll be in different languages, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know what's going on, but okay.
And I'm afraid to, like, mute it, because then if I get distracted, I'll miss out on some I won't know when the show is back on.
You know what, though? They tapped into an idea where they sneak, you know, Peacock, driving me freaking crazy, sneaking those damn commercials in now. I don't want commercials. That's why I pay for streaming services. I don't want the damn commercials, right? That's the whole idea. Right. And if you keep showing me the damn commercials and keep squeezing in more, then I'm not going to pay for you no more. I'll just wait and eventually watch whatever I want to watch for free. But, you know, I'm like, they drive me crazy. But do you think that's something you could throw into, like, serial writing? Is there any way to, like, you know, you could say, oh, you know, please check out my next installment in this series, blah, blah, blah. You know, can you advertise your books while you're doing the serial reading, you know, do little breaks like that? Is that probably plausible? I don't know. I don't do serial reading. So
I think there's a lot of innovative ways. I mean, I have one friend who basically, she's an editor, and she's been writing all these fellows, but she, like, uploads, she's got, like, seven of them, maybe more, I don't know, but she's always putting out Facebook ads and stuff for it, and she gets a pretty good bit of money from it, because the fellows are still a mystery about how much you're actually going to get paid, because the first three episodes are always free on every Vella, so you're not going to get paid for those, but it counts as a read, and then people unlock things, and then there's some mystical, like the bonuses came out today, because the bonuses come out at the end of the month, so these are the bonuses for the end of May. They tell you at the end of June. So I got like $30, but cool. I only had like $2 in token reads, because they only pay you like 5 cents for when people buy those tokens. They're so cheap, you only get like a penny or so from it. But apparently, it's not how many. It has nothing to do with that. It's more like with the reads and the unlocks, and I don't understand it. It's some kind of probably government math or, you know, demon magic. I'm not sure, but you know, I don't know.
You're not wrong.
I do have a book that I'm putting, like, I've had this book done for a long time. It's called Karma Incarnate, and it's like reborn, resist, and rebel. It's like, you know, and I've got two of the three covers done. I was supposed to already have, you know, I've got it all outlined, and I have three pages of the second book written, but the first book was fully edited. I've got the cover. It was ready to go, but, you know, it's a trilogy. It was like the first trilogy that I made that was planned out to be a trilogy, because most of the time my series don't really end on cliffhangers that much, or it's a very small one, or I'll tell you when it's going to come and you don't have to read it. And it won't ruin the story. Like I did that in The Price of Magic. Like you can just stop, or you can go further and read the next part that's going to connect it to the book two, which I have three pages of that written too. I'm very bad about abandoning my four little stories. And it's like Shiny Squirrel, you know, it's like that meme. It's like, you know, my work in progress,
right?
My other work's in progress, but that's me, Shiny Squirrels. And sometimes I finish things. So I thought, well, you know what? It's already edited, paid to get it edited. I'll put it up on Vella. It's like I broke it down because you have to have each episode, as I call it, has to be at least 600 words. So it's so many tokens per 100 words. So for 600 words, it's like 6 tokens. And then, you know, 707. So if you put 1,000 words up, that's going to be like 10 tokens to unlock it. People, it's taking 30, 40 tokens to get the next three episodes. And I'm like, no. So I break it up to where it's between 6 and 10. And 10 is only usually if I couldn't get it to break in the right spot. Because it's harder to break up a book you already wrote.
Right.
Into those little, and you're trying to shoehorn it into that, you know, that little mold there. But some of my stuff that I'm writing right now on Dragon's Treasure, I'm writing it. It's like actively writing. Like I thought, okay, so this will keep me writing. And it's like everything else. It's like, yeah, I haven't touched it in like a month. But, you know, I have like 30 episodes already done, you know, and I know where the story's going. So you think 600 words isn't hard to write, except for when you're not motivated to write. So I thought, well, I'll just throw up Karma Incarnate on this and see how it does, because a lot of people use it to see how people are going to respond to their stories. But it's kind of like anything else. You have to advertise it, because there is no way to search on that, like I wouldn't know how to find stories if somebody didn't give me a link and send me to the story. And it's weird how it shows up. It's like the Velas show up on my Amazon panel, but you know, if you're an international reader or you don't know what that is, you're not going to click on that. And some people are just totally against the Velas because they just, you know, they made up their mind. They don't want to mess with tokens. I get that. But that wasn't an unusual thing to me because they had things like, you know, we had Webtoons, so I was used to that. And they had like Manta Comics, which is like a subscription one where you pay and you can read, you know, the comics as they come out. I've had some of that stuff. And there was like Radish and like some other ones that were like books. And then they had those horrible things that they advertise to you on Facebook that are horribly written. And it's always some $35 later serialized fiction, and the story is kind of almost good, and you want to read it, but it costs you like $50 by the time you're done to read it. And it's,
hell no.
It's never, it's not like they're writing in bad English. It's just they're translated from other things not very well. You know, they don't translate.
Right.
It's not, you can tell it's not edited, but you can slog through it if you, you know, it's not so horrible that you couldn't get through it and enjoy it. And then you get hooked on it because they give you like the first two chapters in those Facebook ads. And then it's like, download our app to see, we give you free chapters.
Like,
no,
well,
they're never free.
Locked in, you know.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. Yep. And then sometimes you have to go and find those books elsewhere. Like sometimes you can find the books on Amazon and like get the actual book.
Right.
Because there's like, what is it? Under the Oak Tree is a comic that I like that comes out serialized. It's on that Manta comic, but you have to pay per month and you get to read everything. But of course, you know, if you get caught up, then there's nothing, and it doesn't always post. So sometimes you're paying for 2 or 3 months and then you don't get your update. But it's on Amazon. Like you can buy those books on Amazon. The comic, like it's not the comic, it's the story that it's based from. And, you know, you can buy the Lore Olympus books, but there's a lot of things that you can find and just buy, you know, and be done with it. But you make more money if it's on a serialized fiction thing. I guess the platform makes more money. But
well, I've not looked into it that much, so I'm like a dummy when it comes to this serial fiction. I know what it is, but I've never actually done it or looked into it. So can you use a book that you've previously written and do this with it? Or does Amazon, like, say like you had a book you wrote 2 years ago, okay, and you want to serial fiction it. So do you have to take it off for sale off of Amazon that way and then just load it up into serial fiction? Or can you leave it for sale and also do the serial fiction with it? I mean,
okay.
What's the rule there?
When the Velas first came out, the reason why I didn't jump on bandwagons, I didn't like their terms. Like, it was, like, really bad. But they've changed it. So the thing of it is with the Velas, it cannot be something that's been previously published. You can't put out any of it for free. Like, you can only use 5,000 words of the entire story to advertise with. The first three things will always be free.
Mm-hmm.
And then 30 days after you put out your last episode, then you can put it into what they call long form, which is the book, where you can publish the book. So, like my friend that I've watched her make, you know, all these Velas, she finished her first season, as she called it, of this book, and then waited the 30 days and then put out the ebook. So the Vela is still up there, and you can leave it if you wait 30 days and then you publish that part that's been out for that long, and that's fine. You can't ever pull it off of the Vela. Like, you have to, like, physically tell them to do it, and you know how great Amazon customer service is. So as long as it's behind a paywall, so that's why I can put the same stuff on Ream, because Ream is a paywall. Like, there's nothing free on Ream. It's like, you got to pay me $5 a month to read this, but you can read all of my things that I've put there, like, all at once. So, theoretically, you save money doing it that way. But, and then, like, you could have your story on Bella, and then, like, if you get a deal with, like, Radish or something like that, because they're behind paywalls, they don't want people to get anything that could have been out there already. And they don't want anything that could be free. You know, they don't want any competition without trying to say that they don't want competition, because it's like, if you won't buy it from us, then you can get it somewhere else, but you're going to pay for it. So, you know, no treaty. So, you know, I couldn't put right. anything that I've already published up on that website for Avella. So that's why I'm literally writing one as I go, and then I'm using a book that I haven't published yet. And then the third one that I started was one for writers, and I called it Story Seeds. And I've got this – I'm really into, like, my first thing – I like RPGs and gaming and stuff, so I've got, like, all this D&D stuff and these dice and all this stuff that I've had and all these random ideas in my head. So I'm kind of making, like, my own section of writing prompts and inspiration and short stories and things for, you know, writers to read, because people do that on Vella, too. And people write recipes. Like, they put all – like, people put their blogs
yeah.
on Vella. I mean, they have
really?
Like, everything on there. Yes, and some people make a killing on, like, their blogs. And I'm like, one of my friends, she's like, I just write about my crazy life. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
I don't know, people pay.
Well, I need to look into this then.
Well,
yeah.
I made it look into this.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I have a crazy life, so, yeah, I could put that in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, just getting, you know, the people to go in there and read it and stuff like that. But and then with the Ream, which is the other serialized thing, I don't think that they have any. I don't think they say anything, because, you know, you're paying for a subscription, you know, so it's kind of like Patreon, but it's made for authors, so it's set up
right.
to put the fiction up there serialized, and it's interesting, but I just, you know, I threw that in there because. People that are in another country to be able to read the stories if they want to, because I don't know
right.
that I'll ever put these, you know, I'll put Karma Incarnate out as a book at some point, and I'm hoping, like, maybe by doing the Vella that maybe that'll give me the time to write the other two books, because, you know, if it's
right.
very last fiction,
yeah.
they'll wait on
yeah.
it, you know, they'll wait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and two, I've noticed a lot of the Vellas are not necessarily the most edited things that I've ever seen. Some people use that to get interest in their story, to get the money from it, to pay for their editing. Some
uh-huh.
people definitely need some editing, and I'm just like, no. But the only thing that sucks
yeah.
about it is you can still return those. Like, you can read it and pay your tokens,
oh.
and you can, like, return it. Because it puts it in your Amazon thing as a digital purchase, so you can go back and see the things that you've read, and you can return them. And I'm like, are you serious?
Not cool.
Yeah. So
cool.
I haven't had anybody do that. But for a while, I think apparently it was a thing. So I don't know how that works. Like, if somebody reads it and then, like, returns it, like, I don't know how that counts.
That.
Because, I mean, they still read it. You can't unread it. So I don't know if it still counts
mm-hmm.
for scratch
right.
or not. But this is
yeah,
only.
That's not cool.
I started in March. Oh. Like, doing this, and I didn't really do anything in April, and there was no money in April, even though I put in stories. You didn't get any reads, you don't get any money. Okay, well, that's great.
Right.
But I got some money for May, and I'll have some reads for June. So, you know, it's something that if you don't have a lot of money, it's something that you can, you know, put your stuff up there, and, you know, you don't have to have a cover, because all you need is, like, all they show you is a circle, like, and they put the title on there. So, like, all the Vellas look the same, and it's just your picture and then the title.
Oh, wow.
And so, basically, you don't want any words on it, because it's going to be little, and you can click on it, but it's not going to get any bigger. And you don't really pick them for that. There's, like, some categories and stuff. And people can put, like, crowns on stories, and I don't understand that. But they, like, are on the page. Like, when you go to the Vella page, like, there are things that are popular, you know, just like on Amazon, popular
right.
stories, and you can find stuff that way. But it's kind of hard to, I haven't figured out how to search for anything on there, but, you know, basically most people advertise those with like a direct link. And or they have a link tree. I have a sleek bio that I put together that's just for like, it has all my Velas on it and it has my ream. So it's basically my serialized fiction, you know, tree of things, because as I add stuff on there, I'll put the link on there, and that way it's all right there and it has a dedicated link to it. Because, you know, I really like the little, it used to be you have to have a website and blah, 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 and I have a website because I'm old. But I really, really, really like things like Sleek Bio and Linktree and things like that, where you just put all the stuff on, like, one little, you know, cheap page and go on with it. Those are helpful. And some people, you know, like, for just like, the more links you have to click on, the less likely they are to buy something. And I'm like, I know that, but people that need serialized
fiction,
I think,
to be able to find you. Well,
yeah,
you want people to be able to find you on their particular favorite social media or whatever, you know?
Yeah, so.
Not everybody's on Facebook. Not everybody's on Twitter.
No. And Twitter's just so dead sad, because I was still performing really well on Twitter until, you know, that guy come along and killed it. I don't even see anything in my feed. It's like, I'm not paying you money, dude, so just go on with yourself. Go to the moon or something. I don't know.
So
I haven't really been on there, but like, that's where all my interaction would come from. But for most of my social media things, I just put it, because it's so easy for me to go in there and add something or update something on that little Sleek Bio thing. And it also integrates with my newsletter service, so you can sign up for my newsletter on the main one. So it's just easier to put that as your link, because as you may have noticed, I'm not the most consistent person, so I may not always update that web page as consistently as I would, you know, just slapping up like a link for click bio and then going and changing it. And it's like, you know,
you
think that
things that work with you, you know,
that
make your life easier.
So, you know, and my website looks really great because I just redid it the other day. Like, I sat down and I found a plugin, because I use WordPress now. I used to code everything by hand, but I have learned that's not cool anymore.
Yeah, we use
WordPress,
and me and WordPress do not get along. Oh, Lord.
Well,
Stephen loves it. I do not.
I like it, too.
It helps me keep things up to date. But we are, I do have to cut in, though. We have like a minute. I just thought we have a minute. We ran over in the extra time. But we have about a minute left, and so I don't want to log off here before or close the show before. Shannon, give us your contacts, because we're almost at time.
Okay. The easiest thing is go to sleekbio.com/ShannonMcRoberts, or go to ShannonMcRoberts.com. That will have all my links on it, and you can find me and contact me. Sign up for my newsletter, all that stuff, and all my other social media is on both of those sections.
Awesome. Well, we filled up the entire live show. We got through.
Yes.
They were about to cut us off on our bonus overtime that we get. It's so we had one heck of a show. You are awesome.
Oh, it's
Thank
been wonderful.
It has been
lots
awesome.
Lots of info. I always learn from you. Always.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
this
has been just fantastic, and I think let us I think sign off here. So, they close us off when we go over a certain amount. So, I want to make sure we don't get you just cut off in mid sentence. So, But thank you so much for coming tonight, and definitely going to have you back again. And we'll have to schedule in like at least a 2-hour show next time, because this has been great. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll have to rein me in.
Yes. No.
Oh,
it was fantastic.
I loved it.
We love it.
We love it.
We love it when it goes over. Yeah. So, definitely looking forward to seeing you next month and having you back on the show again and hope everything goes great. Cause as you said, you have a lot of irons in the fire and I love the new marketing tag, a meatloaf of fantasy. I picked that one up.
Love it.
Great marketing tag. Now get on that Scorpions of Justice final decal sticker because that's going to be a big seller for you.
Yes, I want the sticker.
Okay. Okay.
So Holly, I guess
you
want to.
And you all join us next Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great guest, another great talk. Y'all be creative the rest of the week and have a great one. Good night.